Hello, and welcome to Fathoming Water. I'm your host, Melissa Mosey. This is the second in our follow-up interviews to the Sustainable Water for Southern Arizona Community Forum. This week, we talk to Kip Volpe. Kip Volpe is the vice president and treasurer for the Estates Company, a full-spectrum Tucson real estate development firm. He is also a member of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council and currently serves as co-chairman of the Tucson Regional Water Coalition. It was not in those roles that he attended the Sustainable Water for Southern Arizona Community Forum, but as director of the Vail Water Company. When the Estates Company purchased a large planned community south of Tucson in the town of Vail, they acquired a water company that had a Central Arizona Water Project allotment. If you don't use your water on the Colorado River, you could lose it. Arizona could lose a portion of its share. It could be lost to California or Nevada. It's use it or lose it in the Old West. The problem is, Vail is 45 miles away from the end of the CAP Canal. This presented Kip with quite a problem. So they began groundwater pumping from four different wells near the development area. This is the way they provided reliable and quality water to all of their customers, which has grown over the years since the initial purchase in 1995. So Kip had to be innovative and figure out a way to be able to use the CAP allotment tied to the water company. He ended up negotiating a pioneering wheeling agreement with Tucson Water, a public water company. In this episode, we talk about not only the wheeling agreement and what wheeling is, but why a private water company and a public water company are completely different beasts. The private water companies have to negotiate with the Arizona Corporation Commission, and this can be quite difficult, as Kip will tell you. Any rate increase to cover the cost of the contract or building any sort of connecting pipelines between Tucson Water and Vail Water had to go through the Corporation Commission. Kip ended up doing that, and in May of 2015, they were able to turn off their groundwater wells and turn on CAP water. CAP water that is moved through Tucson Water. And that is what wheeling is taking water from one source, moving it through another system, a third-party system, and delivering it to the end user, in this case, Vail Water Company. Kip and his operations manager, Manny Oros, were generous enough to give me a tour of the site where Tucson Water joins Vail Water. It's a fascinating engineering feat, and it costs much less than trying to run infrastructure all the way from the CAP. But what we also discuss is how economics are based around water and how water influences economics. In this case, Kip is concerned that businesses outside of Arizona aren't moving here because of fear about water shortage. He wants to make sure that people know that Tucson is strong and that there is a foundation of great people and really creative ideas that make Tucson a destination for businesses and to support our economic growth. Kip's perspective is definitely one of the business community, but he argues that everyone has the same goals. We all want reliable water, we all want great places to live, and we all want sustainable solutions. And now, Kip Volpe. Today I'm sitting with Kip Volpe. Tell us a little bit about how you got involved in water and what roles you play in the water world.
I work for a real estate developer in Tucson, and they were multifaceted. And we acquired a large master plan community called Vail Valley Ranch in 1995. And as part of that master plan, there was a small water company called Vail Water Company, at that time called Del Lago Water Company. We changed the name to Vail. And there was about 300 customers, and it was barely getting by. It was held together with the baling wire and chewing gum, as they say.
Now, a lot of these small communities had water companies that had been established for them. And it used to be that Tucson Water would have to take them over. Is that correct?
Yes, but in the water business, everybody has a designated service area. It's called a CCNN. And Vail CCNN abuts Tucson Water's. But if the water company was deficient in any way, then there are assistance programs to come and help bring it back to life. The most important thing in any water company is the quality of the water. You got to serve safe water. And then the next most important thing is reliability. You know, when you turn on the tap, it has to come out.
So if there's a shortcoming on either one of those, Tucson Water would come in?
Not necessarily Tucson Water, but somebody. The state would get involved. If you weren't able to help yourself, if you didn't have the funds, there's a financing mechanisms like WIFA. I'm sorry for these acronyms, but I may not know all the words, but I think it's the Water Infrastructure Financing Authority. I think that's what it stands for. But there are programs and projects like that to help these water companies get up to speed.
Okay, so you came in and you took over this Vail Water Company.
Yes.
And what was that process like?
Well, I had to basically learn the water business from the ground up. I used to take my entire file cabinet. I had this rolling crate. And I put every file I had on my water projects in that. And I would go down, and every Tuesday morning, I'd sit with our engineer from 8 a.m. till whenever we stopped, which usually was after lunch. And we went through every single aspect of that water company. And I was typically with our operator also. So we would talk, we planned how should we develop a master plan, what facilities are we going to need, at what time are we going to need them, how much are they going to cost. I mean, it started from there.
Wow, so a huge learning curve.
A huge learning curve and a long process, but fortunately we weren't in a real growth mode because things were just getting started for the project itself.
So you participated in the Sustainable Water for Southern Arizona Forum, which is part of why you're here today. And you spoke about one of the aspects that you had to overcome in making this water company viable and long-lasting. And it was that you had a CAP allotment that was granted to the original company, I'm assuming?
Yes, yes.
And so let's go through how you took advantage of that CAP.
So the CAP was relatively new when we got involved in the water, when I got involved in the water business. And the first thing you do, you analyze what you have and what your revenues are and what your expenses are. And you go in and try to get a rate increase. I'm sure, obviously, the people in Tucson are familiar with that. We're governed by the Arizona Corporation Commission. So it's a different process. It's really hard to get something through. It's long, it's expensive, and you have to go through layer after layer of bureaucracy and approvals to get a rate increase. And it's formulatic. They're going to let you make only a set amount of money. So it's based typically on your costs plus a small return on your invested capital. So we had this expense. We had this Central Arizona project contract. And if we were going to pay for it, I didn't know where that was going to come from. It wasn't in our rates because it was new. So I went to the Corporation Commission and we said, we want to include this in our rates. We want to include this contract in our rates. And we will recharge the water. This is our plan for the water. So we would recharge our water, and then we would groundwater pump. We'd recharge it up in Red Rock, and we'd pump our wells down in Vail, and it's in the same, what they call active management area, Tucson active management area. So that was considered, that is what they call recharge and recovery. And so there's a law that says it's basically a zero-sum game. Okay, for every gallon you take out of the ground, you have to put a gallon in the ground. So that was the way we were going to do that.
So just to clarify for our listeners, safe yield is the concept of within the active management areas, whatever is going in can be taken out. And it doesn't have to have a hydrologic connection. So you can pump in Vail, you can put in water in Red Rocks, and because it's within the legal boundaries, you're able to pump and take out.
It's considered the Tucson Active Management Area as one big pool.
Yes.
Okay. It's not broken down into smaller pools.
Correct.
So yes. So that was my story to the Corporation Commission and why these expenses should be in there. Well, they'd never really included this in anybody's rates at the time. It was all brand new to them. And so some staff member came up with the conclusion that, okay, we'll let you put it in your rates. And when I talk about putting it in our rates, only a minor portion was going to the user. The vast majority was going to be laid on new hookups. So there was that's the way the structure was. It was a very minor portion, probably less than 25% of the revenues we collected were from the users themselves. It was always from new hookups, so it was from developers. And so they said, okay, well, we want you to have a plan to use CAP Water directly in Vail by 2010. This was back in 2000, so. And by 2015, we want you to be directly using it. Otherwise, you have to refund all the money.
So they did not want you to recharge it into the Red Rocks area? They wanted you to have a direct connection?
They did. However, that was all well and good, except for the canal was 45 miles away from Vail.
Yeah.
How am I going to get that water to Vail? I mean, there's no solution. There were no wheeling agreements at the time. So I'll get to the wheeling agreement situation.
And there's no money from major infrastructure.
And there's no money for it. I mean, you're talking probably north of $50 million to build a canal. Plus, how are we going to get the right-of-ways? I mean, there's just a million things that could go on. In the time between 2000 and 2010, there was another storage facility built, but that was down on Sarita Road. It wasn't that much closer. So there was still no vehicle to get the water to Vail.
I was going to say, was there reasoning behind it?
The reasoning was behind, you know, as I said, that either they subscribe to the idiom, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, or they were just Pollyanna about the whole thing. There was no solution. What I felt, it showed that they didn't know anything about Tucson's water situation.
But you ended up, mother of invention, you ended up coming up with a really neat invention.
Yes. And so here's fast forward to 2010, coming up on my deadline. So every year I write my little notes and send them to the Corporation Commission, you know, my compliance notes saying that, yeah, we're working on it. We think we can do this. And in 2010, they said, where's your plan? Well, there was nothing available even at the end of 2010. Tucson Water, whose service area abuts Vail Waters, had facilities about 2 miles away from ours. Okay. So I had heard that they were negotiating a wheeling agreement with Oro Valley as part of a lawsuit settlement, that they would take some of Oro Valley's water and send it to them, you know, through their facilities. But they hadn't finalized that in 2010. It didn't exist. I called up Sandy Elder at Tucson Water and Chris Avery, who was the city attorney, and I said, you know, can we sit down? I'm interested in doing something like this because, you know, I'm up against this. And they said, yes, we're interested in doing something with you, but we can't do anything until we finalize this Oro Valley deal. So now we're into 2011, and I have the Corporation Commission telling me that I'm in default, and I'm going in and asking them for an extension just on the plans. I will still make my delivery time by the end of 2015. I just want an extension on when I can file my plans because I couldn't control Tucson Water. They took me to the woodshed, to put it bluntly. You know, I was called into the chambers and, you know, he was scolding me how I dropped the ball. And again, it just shows you they didn't know anything about water in Tucson. And so, you know, I took my licks and kept on going and pushing it through. And we had hearings and I went to Dr. Megdahl at the U of A and asked her to write a letter of how important this was for the Tucson area, not just in how important it was for the Vail customers, for the Tucson area, and for really for the state of Arizona, because we put any non-use of our CAP allocation is at risk once there's a shortage because we share it with California and Nevada.
Exactly.
And Colorado. But she was very gracious and wrote this nice letter. And so I think that helped a lot. Chris Avery, the city attorney, came in and testified saying, listen, we've been delaying. We're working on this. You know, this is going to happen. We just don't have any. We're not there yet. So we got granted an extension on our plans after taking a lot of lumps.
But you persevered.
We persevered.
So you're working with Tucson Water. and you come up with wheeling. Now, let's discuss what wheeling is.
Okay. Wheeling is this, that we would deliver our CAP allocation. The canal would flow into their recharge facility, a groundwater savings facility up in Avra Valley. And they would, in turn, as they take our water, they would, in turn, send water down through their system all the way down to Vail. As I said, their facilities were less than 2 miles from us, and we would take the water there. So we connected, I'm jumping ahead of myself, we would connect our two systems, and the water would pass through all Tucson Water's facilities into Vail's facilities and into their pipes.
So it would require a 2 mile addition pipe to connect the two systems.
Yes.
Which is much better than 45 miles.
Yeah.
And so they're putting the CAP water in the ground, pumping it back up.
Yes.
Putting it through their system.
Yes.
And then running it all the way to you.
Correct.
So really, technically, your water is coming out of Avra Valley?
No, my water is not technically coming out. I mean, it is from Avra Valley. Now, it may not have the same fingerprint, but there it is CAP water. I'm giving them CAP, and they're giving me CAP.
And then you pay for the process of moving it through the system.
That is correct.
And that is what a wheeling agreement is.
That is what a wheeling agreement is, yes. So they would take our water and send it to us in layman's terms through this long connection of boosters and wells and pipes.
Okay. And so now it's being delivered. And when did it start being delivered, CAP water being delivered to
You don't want to hear the rest of the story?
Oh, keep going.
Okay. We're just talking about the wheeling agreement.
Oh.
I haven't solved my Corporation Commission issue yet. So I'm running parallel paths here. Okay, how much is this going to cost me, Tucson Water? And how am I going to pay for this? And so Tucson Water comes up with this number based on a bunch of engineering, and it's the direct utility expense, it's the energy expense, it's an allocation of their overhead, it's a depreciation factor on the facilities that are used to get me the water, you know, all those pipes and so on and so forth. So it's a myriad, a matrix of costs. That was all we had. There was some back and forth, obviously. You know, why is this included? And, you know, I don't need fire hydrants. That doesn't do anything for me. Take those out, you know, that type of thing. So there's a lot of minutiae you had to go through. So they came up with a number on how much it would cost me for them to deliver my water to me. So now how am I going to pay for this? The money I had accumulated from the hookup fees for the CAP that they gave me back in 2000 was going to pay for the connection. They had enough money to pay for the connection. How was I going to pay for the ongoing operations? So now I have to go back to the Corporation Commission. Of course, just like in 2000, they have never seen anything like this before. And so it starts all over. I am not dealing anymore with the compliance people who are finally up to speed. I'm dealing now with the rate people. And so we came up with a structure that basically it was a surcharge on the amount for the user. Ultimately, for the end user, they would pay a certain surcharge. And in that, it was just strictly cost recovery, no profit whatsoever. So it was the cost of the wheeling agreement, the cost of the water, and any other ancillary costs that are associated with such. No overhead allocation, nothing. It's direct cost recovery. But the Corporation Commission, if anybody's ever been through a rate case, is they base everything on historical costs. Well, there are no historical costs. This is going to be current cost recapturing, a totally new concept for them. It was, again, you're hitting the collegiate bureaucracy because they're used to doing it one way. But here we are with this important project in peril, and they can't understand what we're doing. No, you can't do that. You know, and so ultimately, we got to the director of utilities at the Corporation Commission was a very sharp guy, and he helped us a lot. His name was Steve Olea. We got our surcharge monitored and put in place. So we had the mechanism put in place in our rates. Okay, now this is 2013.
Okay,
this is 2013. So we had the mechanism put in place. We're not charging anything because we're not taking any water yet. Now we can go build the pipeline because this could all fall apart at any minute if any one of these hurdles doesn't get approved. So we start off and build our pipeline. Okay, so now pipeline's built, connected. It's 2015. And I have to go back to the Corporation Commission because Of course, in 2 years, Tucson, you know, their costs have changed. Okay, so what was approved as a model, now I have to put the real numbers in, which are obviously a little bit more expensive because
inflation,
you know, and utility costs going up and whatever, water costs going up. I plug the model in, I send it on through. Okay, now we're at a whole new set of accountants. Because we're not with the rate people anymore. We're not with the compliance people anymore. We're with a whole new set of accountants. So now I'm educating them. And they said, we've never seen anything like this before. I don't understand this. And how is this going to work? And you just persevere. And ultimately, it was approved. And on May 1st of this year, we turned off our wells and opened the valves and started taking CAP, and we pump zero groundwater, Vail does, to their customers anymore. And it's the ultimate redundancy in the system, which is what you always strive for. Tucson Water, if there was a shortage or for some reason their facility went down, we could still turn on our wells and pump. Our customers have the ultimate guarantee in water service.
And the water table is not dropping under Vail, and so you're less risk of subsidence, et cetera.
Our water table didn't go down dramatically over the 10 years. I mean, it went down. We tested every January, mm-hmm. and it's going to be very interesting to see how much it came up.
Right, even just these few months of not pumping.
Right, it's going to be very interesting.
That will be an interesting study.
So,
okay, so as a businessman, as a developer, have you ever faced this sort of issue with the Corporation Commission before in other aspects of business? Or is this unique?
Well, this is totally unique. This is all pioneering.
Okay.
This is all pioneering. It was pioneering with Tucson Water. It was pioneering with the Corporation Commission Vail also has a designation of a shared water supply, which is some people call it 100-year adequacy. We also got that, a portion of it included in that computation. Also, we got our designation extended to the year 2030, and they didn't know how to handle the wheeling agreement because it's supposed to be a designation for 100 years. So my contract with Tucson Water is 10 years long. With two 10-year extensions, and they wouldn't recognize that. They only gave me 1/10 of my allocation because it's only 10 years old, so it's only 1/10 of 100 years.
Oh, goodness.
So 2030 is a long ways away, so we're fine. But they did tell me if I had a 50-year agreement, they would recognize the whole allocation. But it's fine. We'll continue to work toward that. This is really, we're still very new in taking water and dealing with Tucson Water. And Tucson Water's had some turnover, so I'm going to have to go in there and I'm sure there's an education process. A lot of the people that I negotiated with or were at the table when we did the wheeling agreement with Tucson Water aren't there anymore. In fact, most of them aren't there anymore. I'll envision a re-education process of Tucson Water similar to what I had to go through with the Corporation Commission. But they were a little more, as I said, they were antagonistic. Tucson Water has been a great partner.
They've been a great collaborator.
Yes.
That's wonderful to hear. Yeah. And they do seem to collaborate well with other water entities.
They do.
Yes.
I mean, you know, frankly, it's good for them, too. You know, I mean, you know, if you think about it from a business standpoint, they're allocating a portion of their overhead to me that we're paying.
Right.
And rightfully so, justifiably so. But that covers... That covers some costs. That helps their ratepayers. This is a good deal for everybody.
So you also lead a group of business leaders that are concerned about water. What is that
Yes.
group, and what's the role you play?
Yes, I'm the co-chairman of the Tucson Regional Water Coalition, and it's a group of businesses that probably controls well over 100,000 employees or agents, because the realtors are part of it. We're an educational forum. Basically, people look to us. We don't make formal recommendations for politicians or things like that. We interview them all, like with the CAP. We interview them all. They all come and make presentations to us. And then we advise our groups on who we think, you know, would be the best. And then those groups, our member groups, they make the recommendations.
That's mostly an informational organization.
Yes, it's an informational organization. It really encompasses quite a few
major developers.
Not just developers, but major companies.
Okay.
You know, and major organizations like Southern Arizona Home Builders Association, Tucson Realtors, the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce is one of our members. And so it's super varied.
That gives a great diversity to your ability to incorporate information
right.
and share information.
So it's not like a developer signed up to be part of this. No, he's a member of the Chamber of Commerce, or because the Tucson Chamber is a member too. So it's really an informational. I think we serve a great function because there's so much misinformation out there. You know, I once read an article recently that said, "Is there room for optimism in water?" In Arizona. And I think there is. I think there's the fear factor that's going on. You know, we're not going to have water when we get up in the morning. I'm not going to be able to take a shower. That is not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. Where Arizona and Tucson especially has been on the forefront of water conservation and water planning. And you saw that in the forum. Us in California are night and day.
Oh, completely. Completely night and day. We've been way ahead of the curve. Robert Glennon was on earlier, in an earlier episode, a water law professor at the university, and he said business is not paying enough attention to water issues. And so he brings up places like Google and others that use a lot of water through electricity, mm-hmm. through cooling systems. So what would you say, as a business person in Tucson, Arizona, what would you say to other business people?
First of all, anybody in the desert in an arid place is always going to be a risk. And so water is directly linked to the economy of Arizona. It makes the place habitable, safely habitable, I should say, you know, with air conditioning in the summer and so on. As we move toward more high tech, water is a key input on any production because of what you said, the cooling mechanism. And as you follow that up the product line, when we sell something, when they sell something, they sell a tablet or they sell a microchip or whatever, we're becoming more and more high-tech, meaning we're using more and more energy. And as we know, utilities are a big user of water. So having said all that, it's something that is clearly recognized. It's clearly we should be attractive to people because of our water management practices. Again, we're out in front of this. And I hope that the perception that Arizona doesn't have any water is not keeping too many businesses away, because they do have water. It just needs to be managed. And we're doing a good job today.
So what year was it that you bought the development out in Vail?
1995.
So you've spent the past 20 years learning more about water than you ever thought you would.
Yeah.
And what have you taken out of that?
I think I have a little different perspective because I come from a business background, my CPA by trade. And so numbers are important to me, and it's very interesting. It's very rewarding. And that's why there's such a frustration. And I think you saw that at the forum, of really pertinent information to calm people's nerves down, that we're not going to run out of water, guys. Just be smart about it. We've got all these things in place. And I made the point that I think there are people in our media that are afraid to say something good about water because they're afraid that people are going to start using more of it. And that is absolutely never going to happen. Our attitudes have changed. We're not going to take out our low-flow toilets. We're not going to put grass back in. We're not going to all of a sudden go build a fountain in our front yard. That stuff's changed. We have changed the entire attitude toward water in Arizona over the last 20 years. And they're not going back. So why can't there be the truth in the paper?
I think it's motivated by mostly crisis and
right. fear factor.
Entertainment, yeah, and attracting readers or that kind of thing. And I'm lucky that I get to do this from an educational perspective because it really allows students and others to really understand the nitty-gritty that goes on behind water. So moving forward, what is the vision for Vail's water company moving forward?
We have 100 years worth of water. We have no intention of turning our wells back on unless there's a need emergency.
You will take full advantage of your CAP.
We will take full advantage of our CAP from here going forward. We still have room in our contract because we still do recharge a portion of our allocation. Cool. So we have CAP credits built up. So I just want to say that this is good for the Vail Water customer because they can be assured that their water service is reliable.
And how many people are you servicing now?
It's a little over about 4,200 now. But our CCNN service area calls for a build out about 9,500. Ultimately, over the lifetime of the project, it's, you know, we're a long ways away from that. But so we have water for 9,500.
What about for the Tucson Regional Water Coalition going forward? Where do you see that heading in the future?
Hopefully, it's more of a optimistic outlook toward water that so we can attract businesses and that we can show the collaboration that everybody can truly work together because we're all in the, you know, from the same drinking from the same pool. It's very hard to talk about water without using a water metaphor. By the way.
Yes, we pun all the time over here.
We're all drinking from the same pool. We all have the same goals. The environmentalists have the same goals as the businessman. We want to use the water smartly.
Smart and, you know, have good living spaces,
right.
Have and attract economic growth.
Right.
So in terms of economic growth, our water and our food systems, we've been talking about this with some of the other people, are linked in a larger sense, in a global sense, or even in a national sense or a state sense. And so when you see economic growth happening because of smart water use here, when you look at a place like California that did not have groundwater management put in place until just a couple months ago. How do you think, in terms of economic growth as a business person, what the future looks like for places that are managing water smartly versus maybe just coming on board?
That's kind of obvious. You would think that people would go to where their water is. By the way, California could have jumped on the same Groundwater Management Act as we did at the same time, and they chose not to because they felt they had enough rainfall.
Oh, really?
Just a little tidbit of trivia there for you.
Hmm.
So they kicked the can down the road, and they're paying for it. So as far as I hope we're more attractive, and that's the goal. We got to get the word out. It's a positive thing. You know, it's a Chamber of Commerce thing. It should be TRIO or any of these groups that try to go out and attract businesses. That should be on the forefront. There should be all sorts of water statistics should be part of their sales. It's every bit as vital as workforce or wherever you're going to get the taxes or whatever, cost of living, all those statistics, water should be right there with them.
I like that. So you mentioned you're a CPA. I'm curious about the numbers behind water. You're never allowed to make a profit off of water from the Arizona Corporation Commission, correct?
No, you make a return on your investment. So on your capital investment.
So for our listeners, when they are paying for water, what exactly is the user paying for?
The user is paying nothing for water. By the way, they're paying zero for water. They're paying to cover the expense of delivering a reliable, safe water product to them. And they're paying, that's what they're paying for. They're not paying anything for water. Now, having said that, technically, with the surcharge that we're charging, they are paying for what we pay the CAP for water to get our allocation. So they are paying something out of that.
But it goes directly to the CAP, not...
Just covering costs.
Yeah. So why would any business person get involved in water if this is the case? If water is such a low cost, well, it's not a commodity. It's not traded as a commodity.
It's not traded as a commodity. That's right.
But there is talk about pricing for water. In previous episodes, we've talked about markets. We've talked about increasing the cost of water to make people understand the importance and value of water. What's your thoughts on that?
Okay, my thoughts are this. It seems counterintuitive for, I'm going to use Tucson Water as an example, that when consumption goes down, they can't cover their costs. Okay, does that seem counterintuitive to you?
It does.
Okay, so they promote conservation, and all of a sudden, they're losing money. That tells me one thing, that growth was subsidizing the consumer. Growth was subsidized because they were covering all those costs with all that growth during the go-go times of that ended in 2007. And they were covering lots of costs. And so it bristles me to say that, oh, growth doesn't pay for itself. Growth pays for more than itself. It subsidizes. And that's just the proof. It's right there. So how do you get around that? What you need to do is build your base rate up large enough to cover your costs, and then any incremental usage, then that gets paid for differently. Everybody has gone to, this is getting back to my people's changed their attitudes toward water. Almost every water provider's rates are tiered. So if you're a low water user, you pay the lowest incremental cost, and then it ratchets up. High water users pay the highest incremental cost. And sometimes it's like five times as much as the low water user's incremental cost, maybe more. And so this is another, you know, my attitude is if somebody's a big water user, they are paying for that. They shouldn't be scorned. They are paying for that. And that excess revenue should be being used to cultivate future water sources and future and to assure them that everybody is going to continue to have water. They are paying for that. And they shouldn't be demonized. If somebody has a yard, and there aren't too many of them in Tucson anymore, but if somebody has a yard, he's paying for that. He's paying his fair share. He's not on the back of the low water user.
Interesting. So a business that moves into the area that uses a lot of water, they're paying for their water. They're paying higher cost.
Yeah, they're paying a penalty because their incremental rate's going to be higher.
It's very progressive in terms of like progressive taxation or something.
Absolutely,
like that.
It is. And so,
and does again, it work? Do you think that's an appropriate?
Sure. So now here, so let's flip it around. So because people's behaviors only change for one of three reasons: economic, social mores, or spiritual moral. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So number one and the strongest change of anybody's attitudes or behaviors is economics. So if there's an economic disincentive to have a yard, you're not going to have a yard.
Oh, I discovered that when I moved into my house, there was a yard and it was $50 extra a month to water that yard. I didn't think my yard was worth $50 a month.
There you go. And yeah. And so that's again, gets back to my point that people's behaviors aren't going to change. There's an economic disincentive for them to use more water. But the people who are using more water, they're paying their fair share.
Okay, so you think a pricing water, but pricing it progressively.
Yes, yeah, tiered, what they call tiered rates.
And a tiered rate. Of all your experience you've had with the Corporation Commission, have you seen that is starting to move forward and get in line with some of these new ideas?
Well, I think the greater good won out.
The greater good.
And the greater good was direct use of CAP and getting us off of groundwater pumping. And that was the greater good. And I think they always wanted that. They just didn't know how to get there. And certainly the staff and the lower people below the commissioner level, you know, they're not used to dealing with new stuff. But if there's an edict to do something, we want to, this is good, we'll find a way. I'm just crying in my coffee here. How hard it was, but I got it done, so I don't care.
You got it done.
That's right, and I'm happy about that, and they played their part, and thanks them, too.
Well, okay, so the question I usually start out interviews with is, why is it important for the public to know more about water? And I think we answered that here, which is, it helps economic growth. It helps businesses grow. It helps the economy of the city grow?
It helps. Obviously, we can't survive without it. And it's important to know the facts and quit reacting on emotion only. And I think that's where the media does a disservice to Tucson, because it's all emotional based. And it's really not the facts. So take time to get educated and talk to as many people involved in water as possible. And someone from New York may not be coming here because they're afraid we're going to run out of water. And is that a good thing? You know, is fear a good thing? Is that I don't think it is. I think we have a great place here. We've done a great water management system. So we should celebrate that.
I think so. I think that's a great way to wind up. Well, thank you so much, Kip Volpe. It's been wonderful talking with you and getting the business perspective on water. I really appreciate you coming in.
Well, it's my pleasure, Melissa. Anytime.
Thanks. Thank you so much to Kip Volpe for coming in and being one of the follow-up interviews to the Sustainable Water for Southern Arizona Community Forum. I appreciate it so much. It's great to get that perspective from business. I think we learned a lot about how economics and water interact at the local level and at the state level. We learned a lot about what wheeling is, how a private business company has to negotiate with the Arizona Corporation Commission, and the use of CAP water and how to get creative with the use of CAP water so that Arizona can keep it, which allows Arizona to be economically strong. Next week, we will have our third follow-up interview to the Sustainable Water for Southern Arizona Community Forum. This time, we talk community and environment with the Community Water Coalition Coordinator, Carolyn Roach. She represented the Community Water Coalition at the Sustainable Water for Southern Arizona Community Forum. Carolyn Roach brings a passion for promoting sustainability and community building in a way that has direct impacts for human communities and natural environment. The coalition works to provide leadership and guidance towards water policy that sustains healthy ecosystems and quality of life and respects our diverse community values. Carolyn holds an MS in Urban Planning from the University of Arizona and a BA in English Literature from San Francisco State University. I'm looking forward to talking with Carolyn Roach next week. I hope you tune in and listen. Thank you so much once again to Kip Volpe for being part of our podcast, Fathoming Water. Thank you so much to Chris Levesque for our theme music. Thanks to KXCI, and thank you for listening. I'm your host, Melissa Mosey.